on ABC Radio and on your pod. You're with me, Noel Debien, on The Good Life. St. Ignatius of Loyola is a reasonably well-known Christian saint. He started out life as a Spanish knight in the early 16th century and ended up becoming a religious leader. He founded the Jesuits. His feast day is July 31st, and many Christians mark this day for the method by which they try to lead the good life. The Ignatian method is, or the Ignatian exercises are, a set of principles and exercises developed by Ignatius of Loyola as a way for leading the good life. All Jesuits use this Ignatian method as part of their training, and it's pretty rigorous stuff, ideally involving 30 days retreat from the world as a time of focused preparation. And it's not only for the Jesuits. Many Catholics and other Christians live this Ignatian method as their chief plan for the good life. I spoke to a teacher of the Ignatian method to find out more about it.
I'm Margaret Byrne. I'm a Sister of Charity. I am a teacher by profession and taught secondary education, and currently am in tertiary education. One of my main area is the New Testament, but one of my other passions is for Ignatian spirituality, partly because it's a tradition of the Sisters of Charity, also though because I believe in it so strongly that Ignatian spirituality is a time-honoured lay spirituality, one of the very few that was never monastic and therefore has enormous potential for modern people.
Margaret, spirituality, it's a bit of an elusive word. What does that mean? It can be pie in the sky, can't it? But for you, what content does that word have?
It can be pie in the sky, but I think for many people it does have meaning, perhaps even in a secular humanist sense. It's what gives meaning. And what one then takes from that meaning and develops into goals and values and so on, all of that.
When did Ignatius intersect your life?
Not until I actually entered the Sisters of Charity. I was almost 18. I entered in February, and so I went bang straight into Lent. And as part of our first 6 months as apostolate, we were led through an 8-day retreat, which the novice mistress gave to us. And I was grabbed by it. Apart from anything else, there was something actually logical about it all. It kind of had a shape to it, which made enormous sense to me. Then we had a very elderly Jesuit came at sometime during that year to preach to all the novices. And again, it was the pattern of the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius. And I was just bowled over. I just thought it was absolutely wonderful.
What was it that grabbed you about Ignatius and what he was saying and what he was advising?
It was real. It was big. It was the big vision thing. It was about finding God in all things. It was about having God as the key focus, but seeking the glory of God. The goal of Ignatian spirituality ultimately, which is spiritual freedom, was not clear to me at that stage. It would have been some years later before I actually got onto that. I can see now, looking back, that that is what was attracting me.
You mentioned the exercises. What are the spiritual exercises? That's a proper name, isn't it?
That's a proper name, the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. They're really meant to be notes for people who are going to help another person to pray through a retreat.
They're notes for the retreat leader, you mean?
They're notes for the retreat leader.
Not for the person themselves.
Not for the person, because it's dry as sticks. If you just pick up the spiritual exercises, you'd probably be, as I was, really disappointed. I thought, oh gosh, you know, this, it didn't have any life to it. Mm. It only becomes life-giving once it's the experience. What is powerful about it, and what then gives it another dimension, is that it is grounded, that everything that Ignatius writes, he actually experienced at the time of his conversion.
So it's about his personal conversion and his personal steps along his pilgrimage.
The exercises originally were formulated by him not long after his conversion, when he spent about 9 or 10 months in Manresa in Spain, struggling and actually agonising about what was God saying to him in all of this, because he'd had the conversion after he'd had a military accident, for want of a better word, where his leg was smashed. And he had to take time out, a Catholic in name, he and many of his fellow soldiers, would have taken for granted. For example, they went to Mass on Sunday, but they probably very rarely, if ever, went to communion. Maybe
not,
just
not
once
converted,
a year.
As it were.
Not converted in spirituality terms. He had this experience at his conversion while he was lying there recovering, being bored to tears, and asked for books. And of course, for a young man like that, whose whole idea was that he was going to go out and find this wonderful woman, a bit like the Man of La Mancha, the Don Quixote dream thing, which, you know, the chivalry, that time of chivalry and so on. This woman would attract him so much, he would give his whole life to following her and obeying her and being at her service. While he was daydreaming like that, he asked for something to read. And he developed this, of course, through the novels of the time, which were a bit like Mills and Boone, if you like, as far as I can see. So they gave him The Life of Christ and The Life of the Saints, which were the only two books in the place where he was staying. When he first started reading, he was bored and all of that. But then he started to wonder, you know. And then on the other hand, when he thought about this lady and romantic ideals and everything, he got all excited. But then after a while, it kind of paled. He started to see these two kind of experiences as having real validity. At base, they became then what we know as discernment, that he could trust that the good spirit was guiding him to say what is worthwhile in life, which may be to give my whole life to God, is where I feel at peace. And the opposite, where it's all exciting and everything else, at first I feel good about it, but then it
feels
becomes
bad.
Tawdry.
So, and he called those two things consolation and desolation,
correct,
didn't he? So they're like poles, as it were.
That's right.
Consolation brings peace of mind,
deep peace
of heart.
Even though, like, we can experience consolation even though we might be having a tough time.
So that even in things that are difficult, if we're experiencing consolation according to his theory, then we're on the right path, even if things appear to be going wrong, yet we still have within us that peace or stillness.
That's right.
And yet we might be having a wild old time with, you know, parting and whatever else, and at the end of it, even though it's exciting at the time, there's an emptiness or a black hole, and he'd call that desolation.
Yeah.
It's the discernment of spirits, he called it, didn't he?
He did.
And it's referring to these two spirits of consolation and desolation?
Yes, he called it the good spirit and the evil spirit. And the evil spirit brings about desolation in either of those two, as you said, those two kind of almost polar opposites.
Have you experienced these things yourself?
Yes, I have.
This has been part of your own pilgrimage. This is why you've linked to him?
That's right. It's a very practical, I think a very practical way of coming to understand what's happening in our spirit and how God, like a person, a Christian, would then believe this is the work of God speaking within us, acting through the Holy Spirit of Jesus.
Well, of course, we've spoken previously on Trinity, and the theory of Trinity was very important to Ignatius and about that relationship within the Trinity.
Yes.
Deprivation is something that I noticed when I was reading about this that was important to what Ignatius was talking about. I mean, how do you undertake something like that? Deprivation can't be fashionable in the 21st century.
The better word, I think, is indifference.
Not to be connected, the same as the Buddhists would say, not to be attached, as it were.
Not to be attached.
To be detached.
That's right. But not because it's considered not to be good, because the fundamental thing is God is present in everything, in the secular, the sacred. In fact, Ignatius would probably say, essentially, there's no secular and sacred. They're both imbued with potentially the good spirit or even the sacred can have a bad spirit enter into it, as we know perfectly well.
Religion can become pretension, or it can become power, or it can become corrupt.
It can even be used for abusive reasons,
and
as
we've just seen in Ireland here.
Absolutely.
And have had here and right throughout the world.
That's right. The very first exercise of the spiritual exercises is the principle and foundation that God calls every single one of us into a loving relationship with God and invites us to live accordingly, finding God in all things and looking towards what God is asking of us, and that's where discernment comes in. If we deprive ourselves of something, either because we sense that God's calling us to do that, to let go of something that's important or we think's important in our lives, whether it's a relationship that's not leading us to God or whatever, or it can be a good thing for want of something better. And that's where the margus comes in, the more. the Latin word more, which was the basis.
The greater glory, as it
absolutely.
Were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the Magis is now the ordinary word we're using all over the world for the Jesuit and Ignatian women's youth ministry.
Silence is important in this process too. Well, Ignatius taught that silence was important. Why?
Well, as we know, silence is important in all prayer and Christian meditation, not just Christian, all meditation. Sufi meditation, all sorts would require silence because we need outer silence so that we can gradually enter into the deeper silence within ourselves, which is where we sense that God speaks. Now, one of the fantastic things about Ignatius and Ignatian spirituality is that we can actually find God in the hurly-burly of everyday life. We don't have to always go off to a monastery, but we must have some kind of a rhythm where there are times of silence, ideally every day, that we take some time out to just be still and for God to be able to speak to us through the Spirit.
And is it in that silence that the discernment of spirits is taking place? Is that what's happening?
On the whole, I think so. It's very difficult to enter into that discernment if you're surrounded by noise and distraction.
Is it a spirit of consolation or is it a spirit of desolation?
Well, in order to discern that, and to be true to it and not have a superficial response, oh, this is very, this is consolation because I feel good, that kind of stuff. That's all peeled away the more one can sit and let, because it's a sifting. It's
just
a
go
sifting
deeper.
Through.
Go
exactly
deeper.
Right.
You mentioned before when you were talking about deprivation. Are you able to give a couple more examples just to give a sort of a practical way that this sort of path of Ignatius might in, you know, strike a person, why, where I might come to or where you came to, where you said, I'm going to put that aside, even though it seems good to me, I think it's going to distract me from my main purpose. And my main purpose is oriented towards God.
For celibates in particular, that can be a struggle because like every human being, we meet people and sometimes we're very attracted to them. And so that can be a real struggle.
And sexuality can be a compulsion, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for many of us, it was only long after we'd entered religious life that we may have had that experience. And many people have had it. And it's something that once it's all settled down, you rejoice in it because it's a good. I mean, it's part of
it. It's a consolation.
It becomes a consolation. But when you're struggling with it, it's not very consoling because it's tough, you know.
What about goods? What about ownership of goods? Mm. You're a sister of charity.
Mm.
You don't, from what I've seen, you don't have much private property.
Well,
you're not building houses.
I've just bought two bookcases so that I can put some of my books in some kind of order. Basically, we don't own anything as religious. We have the use of whatever we need for our work and we have the use of small amounts of money. Not by any means what people would probably consider necessary, but we're well cared for. We don't have to worry about rent or board, and that's all provided. There's a degree of freedom in not owning a house or owning a car.
It's a consolation also?
I suppose it would be. I haven't thought of it terribly much in those terms. It's just that, but there are times when I think that's true.
There's one more thing that I think we have to touch on when we're talking about Ignatian spirituality that you sort of can't go past, and that's the principle and foundation. It's a very important part of what Ignatius taught. What is the principle and foundation, essentially?
That God has made us because God is love and God has expressed this and has willed to create humankind out of love in order that human beings, men and women, would eventually then find their way back to God and share God's life. It's essentially the gospel as all charisms or all traditions are.
So God is the goal of the pilgrimage.
God is the goal of the pilgrimage.
Keep eyes on God, all else falls into place, as it were.
That's right. And it then goes on to say, and therefore that we then become indifferent whether we're going to have a long life or a short life. None of those things matter. Because we keep coming back, as I was saying in the conversation about the Trinity, we keep coming back to the fact that we've been invited by God to make our home with God all of our life. And so we're never really alone. As Jesus said, I'm never alone. The Father is always with me. That's true for us as well. And that's intimately linked and why I think Ignatius found the Trinity so central to his own spirituality.
Dr. Margaret Byrne, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.